What's up, everybody? Welcome to the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Michael Fabiano, alongside the man, the myth, the soon-to-be legend, Graham Barfield. What's up, pal? How was your weekend?
Good, man. It was really nice. We had a nice long weekend here. Went to the golf tournament. We were just talking about it.
Yep, Riviera.
It's a beautiful course.
Yeah, it is.
Have you gotten to play any golf recently?
No. So, like, now that we had to move, I have to drive Matthew to school and then pick him up, and it's a half an hour drive rather than a 7 minute walk, which is what I had before. So right. I haven't played golf at all yet, man. Like, I get, and I'm like studying film on these rookies. So even though it's not as busy, there's still stuff to do. It's like you go from, you know, just completely covering fantasy football 24/7 to like, well, covering fantasy football for a portion of your time, but then you got dad duties as well. So
right. It's,
I got to get out there, man. I'm actually afraid to swing a golf club. I haven't played since like August. It's going to be fugly, man.
Yeah.
It's going to be bad. Dude,
I played a little bit a couple weeks ago and literally couldn't swing. Couldn't.
Oh my gosh.
I hadn't played in like 6-7 months too.
Yeah. So, behind the glass as always, our pal Eddie, do you tee it up at all or no?
I did. I used to play in high school actually.
I did too.
I was a real avid player. And then, and then, like, once I just started working, and I went to college in Boston. There are some courses up in the Northeast, like in New England area, but most of the time it's cold, and like it's gonna, you just don't want to golf in, you know, upper 30, lower than 40 degree weather. So I kind of just only did it when I was home and hit the driving range here and there. But I know everyone around LA was trying to get to Riviera on Sunday, and it was a really nice day. I actually just drove down Wilshire to Santa Monica, and I saw the there was like a blimp circling the course, and I was like trying to think for like, it took me like 5 minutes, and I'm like, oh, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Typically go, Jim Nance is a good friend of mine, so, and I don't get to see Jim that much, so I'll go and see him on 18, but I just didn't get a chance to go, man. It's, you know, kid, girlfriend, baseball practices, that kind of stuff. You know, life comes at you, brother, so sometimes you can't do what you want to do out there. But we've got a lot of news to get to, Graham, so let's get to that. The big news this morning is that Drew Brees is apparently somewhere very tropical and decided he was going to take a photo, nice scenery, and tell everybody that he's coming back in 2020, which I kind of feel like we sort of figured that, right?
Yeah, we kind of knew.
Yeah.
We knew Brees would bring it back one more time.
Yep. I mean, the way the Saints have had the worst luck in the playoffs over the last few years. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe he's going to just give it one more run. From a fantasy perspective, we've talked about Brees. He's going to be sort of, you know, I would say somewhere between 8 and 10 in terms of rankings of the position. Averaged over 20 fantasy points per game this past season, although he did miss some time due to that thumb injury. But he was gangbusters in the fantasy playoffs. I mean, he put up huge numbers. I believe it was over 90 fantasy points he scored in those 3 weeks. So Drew Brees is back. That'll keep the quarterback position deep, which it typically has been over the last few years. So Brees is back. He is a free agent. We assume he's going back to the New Orleans Saints. Good news for Michael Thomas. Good news for Alvin Kamara. Good news to everybody in a Saints uniform on the offensive side that has any fantasy value.
So what does this do for the Taysom Hill hype? I'm sure you've seen it. You know,
I know. Well,
Hill's a free agent as well.
Not only that, but Teddy Bridgewater, there's a report that he's going to get $30 million a year. What? Did you see that?
I'm looking for $30 million a year, too, man.
$30 million a year? You got to be out of your freaking mind. I mean, I know he was good, lad, but $30 million a year? He could end up being a starting quarterback somewhere around the league. But, yeah, I don't know that the Saints are going to keep two out of the three. Obviously, Brees is going
to
be the one guy that does come back. But, I mean, Taysom thinks he's an NFL core. I would like to see it. From a fantasy perspective, hell, he'd be right near the top of my sleepers list.
I'm with you on that.
Right?
If Hill got an opportunity to actually,
I know,
he'd probably be pretty fun for fantasy.
Yeah, dude, he'd be a lot of fun. So we'll see what happens, but Brees likely to be a top 8, top 10 fantasy quarterback in the rankings and a late-round pick because that's where quarterbacks go these days. Let's move on. Ian Rappaport, our pal here at NFL Network and NFL Media, suggesting that Le'Veon Bell could be one of the big-name players on the trade block coming up this offseason, which, I mean, isn't really a surprise. And I'd love to get him as far away from Adam Gase as possible in that Jets offense. So Bell could be traded, And we already know that Melvin Gordon's likely to move on from the Chargers. We also have got a report that David Johnson is not going to be released. It's just not an option for the Cardinals, according to their GM, Steve Keim. But there's a chance he could be traded. So the running back position could have a very different look if some of these guys end up being on the move, Graham.
Look, I don't want to – I still think Lev Bell is a very, very talented football player. He's a very good receiver.
And today's his birthday. He's 28, so it's not like he's an old dude.
Right, and I think he was very underutilized with Adam Gase. But the fact remains that he had 245 carries this past year, and his longest gain, Fabs, was 19 yards.
I know.
I mean,
yeah.
the explosiveness just was not there
yep.
this past season. And, you know, I think I think anybody saw this kind of coming, after Adam Gase kind of made some comments that it seemed like he really wanted Le'Veon Bell in there in the first place. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it looks like Bell might be looking for him.
Yeah, so we'll see. And again, when you look down the list of teams in the league that could use a featured back, we always go to like the Houstons of the world and the Tampa Bays of the world who could use a number one. But we'll see. As long as Le'Veon Bell ends up being a featured back somewhere around the league, I'm fine with it. And I'd love to see him get out of the gangrene. Let's put it that way, because it was not good this past season. The Panthers are expecting Cam Newton to pass his physical in March. And that is a big point of contention right now with Cam, because you see reports out there that he could end up being released or the Panthers could move on to another quarterback, potentially as a stopgap to a younger quarterback. We've seen them tied to some of the young prospects coming in right. the league in 2020. But let's just put it this way. If Cam Newton is a starting quarterback in the NFL, I mean, I don't really think it matters where. Maybe it'll be Chicago, maybe it'll be Carolina, maybe it'll be the Chargers. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here. Where would you draft him? Because I get it. I understand that Cam Newton has been, for most of his career, an enormously successful fantasy quarterback. But if you look back at his last year and a half of work, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there that sure. really makes you question whether or not he's still the same player.
Sure. Had the shoulder injury in 2018. Basically was a shell of himself this final 5-6 games
right.
to try to gut it out in 2018. And obviously missed this whole past year. We just haven't seen enough of healthy Cam, here in 30, 31 years old. If he's back in Carolina, I will be pretty interested to see where he goes in late rounds. I'd assume he's going to be, 11th, 12th, 13th round pick. But I'd probably be into it in that range just because the Panthers have a ton of weapons that we love and McCaffrey and DJ Moore looks like a bona fide number one wide receiver. And we'll see what Curtis Samuel can do as he continues his evolution.
Yep.
I'd be into Cam again. Mm-hmm. It's just, right now it's
just because of the cost.
Right. It's just,
right?
it'll be an opportunity cost type thing for
yep.
sure. But,
yeah.
But his health is obviously the biggest question mark going into 2020.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, I mean, like you take away his rushing success in the NFL and he's an average fantasy quarterback. He was an elite guy because of what he did as a runner. The fact that he was Carolina's goal line back for all intents and purposes for so long. And that stopped. I mean, and it had to do partially, we'd have to think, with the injury that he had sustained and had been dealing with. But, yeah, Cam Newton's no longer a QB1 in fantasy. And if he moves on, again, maybe could end up being a pretty decent bargain late in drafts because that's where he's going to go. Speaking of quarterbacks, and this is going to be such a fun offseason when it comes to the quarterbacks with so many big names who could be on the move. Let's talk about Phillip Rivers. Now, we did talk about him last week a little bit because the Chargers had decided that they were going to part ways. Rivers had already moved his family to Florida. And now his, former teammate, Melvin Gordon, is speaking out and saying, quote, "I think he'll go to the Colts," end quote. And it seems like a good fit, right? I mean, Jacoby Brissett was, right? As much as people wanted to, push the narrative of Brissett being a good NFL quarterback, to me, he's a backup.
He was fine.
To me, he's a backup. He was all right. I mean, he did all right, but I think this is a really good fit. And the Colts can go out, draft a quarterback, and Rivers could be the bridge for a couple of seasons. I think it's a good move all around, too. It's going to be good for T.Y. Hilton. It's going to be good for Paris Campbell. It's going to be good for Marlon Mack as well. Rivers has been at the helm of some offenses that have had some great players. Keenan Allen's been a very good fantasy receiver during his time in San Diego and Los Angeles. So Rivers going to the Colts, to me, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I agree. I think right now it's between probably the Colts and the Bucks.
And the Bucks, yep.
I think that's the two odds-on favorites. I thought the Jags might be a little bit interested, but I don't know. It sounds like maybe they'll roll into the year with Minshew.
With Minshew, yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you, though. If Rivers goes to the Colts, it's kind of like...
I like that. Yeah, I'm not saying Rivers is going to be a QB1,
right.
But he'll be drafted, and it's going to help the players around him as well.
I agree. And, you know, perfect fit for them, too. I mean, he's got a great offensive line. He'd have a great offensive line for really the first time in his career.
That's huge, and a great point, Graham, because you get him behind that offensive line, maybe the turnovers start to go down a little bit. He's got more time in the pocket. We all know he's not very mobile, and the Colts do have some weapons there in that passing game. So
the biggest thing with Rivers in his career is he's just not been well protected.
Yeah.
I mean, the Chargers offensive line, especially the last couple of years, has been... one of the 10 worst in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Colts are easily one of the 5 or 6 best. So
no doubt.
I'd be really excited. Not for fantasy. I wouldn't want to draft Rivers very much for fantasy. I'd rather take a late round shot on Cam, actually.
Yep.
But for you know, just for what it could be, you know, in terms of efficiency with that offense, I'd like Rivers. In
well, I mean, look at the division right now. That division's very winnable.
It is.
For anybody.
The Texans get up there and then they disappoint us.
The Texans are, they're sort of like a paper AFC South champion.
You know,
they're not going to go too far. And you bring Rivers in, you know, the Colts could end up being a contender, a real contender in that division. Continuing on with the quarterback theme, the report is that the Las Vegas Raiders are prepared to give Tom Brady a $60 million contract over 2 years. $60 million. Now, I still can't see in my heart of hearts Tom Brady leaving New England. I can't. That doesn't mean it's not going to happen, but I can't see it. It would be so weird for Brady to be wearing not only a Raiders uniform, but a Las Vegas Raiders. It would be just so odd. It'd be great for the franchise because, boy, that stadium will be filled every single Sunday that the Raiders are at home. But do we still believe Brady's basically an 80-20 lock to go back to New England?
I think so. Again, I think the Pats they'll figure this out. They'll figure it out. And the thing is like, what other than trying to just sell tickets, because I think they're going to sell tickets no matter what. But other than trying to get people to come to the games, what are you achieving by getting Tom Brady at this point? Because, I mean, look, Brady can't push the ball down the field 35 plus yards like he used to, but he and Derek Carr play very similar at this point in their career. You know, Carr limits turnovers, Brady limits turnovers. They're both not necessarily throwing the ball into tight windows super often. I'm just not sure what the Raiders in terms of direction would be doing, bringing in Brady other than just to sell tickets. And, you know, if that's their goal, then that's their goal.
Just a few stats on Brady too. You know, we've known he's been an elite quarterback for a long time, but the last couple of years he's fallen off that mantle. Only 24 touchdowns this past season. That's the fewest he's had in a full year since 2006. Brady averaged 6.6 yards per attempt this season. By comparison, Lamar Jackson averaged almost 7 yards a rush. Brady averaged 16.5 fantasy points per game this season, his lowest total since 2013. He had fewer than 18 fantasy points in 6 of his last 8 games, during which time he averaged 14 points per game. He turns 43 on August 3rd. No player in NFL history has had more than 150 fantasy points at age 43 or older. So, I mean, from a fantasy perspective, I don't care where he goes. Even if he stays in New England, he's not an elite guy anymore. He's a QB2 who may not get drafted in a lot of fantasy.
The biggest problem for Brady this past year is, you know, not only has his skills declined in terms of just throwing the ball deep, like he had no receivers. And if he goes to Las Vegas, it's not like they're exactly.
They need it, right.
Yeah, they need receiver help just as bad.
I mean,
as the Patriots do.
Whether it's, you know, trying to get a guy like AJ Green or drafting somebody in the first round, and this class is like loaded with wide receivers. So now tight end's nice there with Darren Waller, but other than that, Tyrell Williams and Hunter Renfrow, I mean, not exactly.
That's not. Yeah.
Not exactly.
Not much,
you know, the days
the
of like Randy Moss and Julian Edelman back in the days for the Patriots. We mentioned that David Johnson is not going to be released by the Cardinals, and that has a lot to do with his contract, but he could be traded. Now, Rap Sheet also suggests that the Cardinals can end up franchising Kenyon Drake. Kenyon Drake, when you look at his numbers, once he was traded over from Miami, he was one of the best running backs in fantasy football. In fact, he finished as the third best back based on fantasy points from week 9 to 17. And if the Cardinals decide to franchise him and they can't move on from David Johnson, is Drake going to see that same usage? or are we going to see a committee situation? You've also got Chase Edmonds there as well. For me as a fantasy owner, I'd love to see, and I've said it a million times, I'd like to see David Johnson go to Tampa Bay where he'd be reunited with Bruce Arians. But if Johnson is there in Arizona, is Kenyon Drake's stock, how bad of a hit does it take? Because they're not going to have David Johnson on the roster and have him sit on the bench all season long.
Yeah, this DJ contract has kind of forced them into a corner.
Right.
Because they can't cut him. They'd just be eating a ton of money. And if they do trade him, it'd be for like a sixth or seventh round pick. For what it's worth, if the Cardinals franchise tag Kenyon Drake, I think that would be pretty shocking because they would be allocating like at least 15, 20 plus million just to the backfield in terms of Drake and DJ. That just would not make any sense. I mean, if DJ's still there, Edmonds is still around, I will have a hard time.
Is Drake a two?
Yeah.
Is he a two with those two players in the backfield?
I think he'd be more of like a RB3 flex.
Okay, yeah.
Just because, DJ will probably take some of the receiving load back. And I think we know this past year, too. I mean, DJ got hurt again. Tried to play through the injury, and then he, essentially was ineffective. Mm-hmm. The Cardinals they had to roll with Drake because DJ wasn't right.
Yeah, he wasn't right. And that's going to be a big storyline over the offseason and into camps as to whether or not David Johnson is a Cardinal and if he's back to being 100%. Last bit of news here, and of course, all of the Jameis Winston eyesight jokes were all over social media when it was reported that he underwent LASIK surgery to repair his vision. Maybe that will help him throw the ball to his teammates and not the other team in 2020. But the real news here is that Coach Bruce Arians has said that the Buccaneers have yet to make a decision on whether or not Jameis Winston is going to be back with the team in 2020. And, we've heard reports that if Tom Brady ends up leaving the Patriots, that Jameis could end up being an option for New England. I don't know if that's going to happen. That would be wild if it did. But Jameis's best value, Graham, is probably staying in Tampa Bay.
For fantasy football, absolutely.
Yes.
And for, for his receivers. I know everybody loves to pick on Jameis for all the picks and, boneheaded decisions, whatever. He was lights out for fantasy this past year. I mean, he helped get Chris Godwin and Mike Evans into the top five in terms of fantasy points just because the Bucs had to keep throwing. Threw for over 5,000 yards and... I get it. There were some backbreaking picks in there and some boneheaded plays.
30-30.
Sure. But look, I mean, he was golden for fantasy. He was highly entertaining for fantasy, too, just from a enjoyment of watching the games. I mean, like, you never knew what was going to happen on any given play. And, and if he would throw a pick, it would keep the other team in the game and always keep the games competitive and the scoreboard filled with points. I hope Jameis is back in Tampa just for our entertainment value factor.
Yeah, no doubt. And for the value of Godwin and Evans, as you mentioned. But the Buccaneers have been linked. You mentioned Rivers. Bridgewater, the $30 million man. There's no way that's...
Bridgewater doesn't make sense in Tampa to me. Because Aarons loves guys that can take risks.
Yes.
And Teddy does not take
risks. And go downfield. And then they've also been linked to Ryan Tannehill if the Titans don't end up franchising him.
Which
and by franchising Tannehill, it's going to cost them a pretty penny. But, dude, he was really good.
Well, we talked about it last week, but the Titans are going to have to figure out what they want to spend on Tannehill and Henry.
Yeah, exactly, because Henry is an unrestricted free agent, and, he's the lifeblood of that roster at this point on the offensive side. They really need to do something there. They could end up being in the Rivers sweepstakes as well, right? Potentially, if they decide that...
All signs have pointed towards the Bucs having interest in Phillip Rivers.
Mm-hmm.
Like we talked about, I think it'll come down to Colts and Bucs, and I don't know. I think you could make the same argument we just made for Rivers a minute ago with Tampa. Obviously, it's a significantly worse offensive line, but great coach who could scheme Rivers into success, and they obviously have two fantastic receivers, and O.J. Howard too is a wonder. I think he's still a very talented tight end and can be a fantasy stud. In 2020, it just comes down to who's going to be the quarterback there and how they're going to scheme them the ball. But yeah, I think you can make the same argument for Rivers and Tampa that we just made for Indy.
Again, going to be a very interesting offseason.
It's fun
here, Eddie. That's the news, pal.
That was the news.
So last week, Graham and I went through a lot of the free agents at the four major positions in fantasy football. This week, we're going to turn our attention to the scouting combine. Now, there's a lot of, I mean, a lot of good players in this class, especially at the wide receiver position. There's some big name quarterbacks in here. So we're going to go through six names that you're going to definitely need to know. And we can go through some more next week as well. But I feel like this list is a good start, especially if you're sort of you're projecting sort of some of where some of these rookies might rank from a fantasy standpoint once they're drafted. And we're going to start off with Joe Burrow. Now, there's some interesting news floating around about Burrow and him talking about having leverage as it pertains to being drafted in the National Football League. There's some interesting stuff going on in terms of maybe him not wanting to go to Cincinnati. Could we potentially have another Eli Manning, I don't want to go to the Chargers scenario here? We know Burrow is working with Jordan Palmer, who happens to be the brother of Carson Palmer. And I'm sure that Carson Palmer has probably not said too many good things about the Cincinnati Bengals franchise. And maybe has talked to Burrow and said, you might not want to go to Cincinnati. That would be an interesting scenario there. Because imagine if Burrow had said, I'm not playing for you. Okay, like he goes, you know, he does the whole John Elway thing. I'm not playing for you, Baltimore Colts. You know, Eli Manning, I'm not playing for you, San Diego Chargers. What the hell would it take to trade up to number one? What would the Bengals get in a trade for the team that gets Joe? Like, I don't know if it's going to happen. I mean, but that's what we're hearing here in February. I mean, the owner would probably have to give up, you know, firstborn children.
Something like that.
I mean, like,
it'd have to be something absurd.
Something ridiculous, right?
I mean, I think pretty much every team is going to be looking, like the Dolphins for sure are going to be looking to
move. Oh, my God. Yeah.
To leapfrog and maybe get to the Giants spot. And if the Bengals and maybe Joe Burrow doesn't want to go to the Bengals, whatever that case may be, if the Bengals are in the market for moving the first pick because of whatever reason, I mean, they would get a king's ransom because Joe Burrow is,
right,
he's that dude.
It would be unbelievable, it would be extremely entertaining for us fans and analysts out there, too, because Burrow is the type of quarterback who could come in and change a franchise, but
I do find it interesting.
It's the Bengals.
Though. Yeah, I find it interesting that he said he had he has, like, leverage and then didn't really say much else about it. I mean, Burrow grew up, like, what? How far is Athens outside of Cincinnati? It's like a couple hours.
Yeah.
Technically, he'd be going close to home again,
right,
if he got drafted by the Cincinnati Bengals. So I don't know. Maybe the hometown, he doesn't have much.
I'm from Connecticut, not for nothing. I don't want to go back there.
Exactly.
Maybe. So I mean, like, you
maybe
know,
he doesn't have much since.
Right.
Very many.
Exactly. So let's go over some of the details with Burrow. And I've been watching some film on the guys that we're talking about here over the weekend. Played 15 games last year. Burrow, 56-71 through the air. I mean, 60 touchdowns, an NCAA record, only 6 interceptions. Completion percentage at 76.3, which is bananas. That was almost an NCAA best. He also rushed for over 360 yards and at least 5 touchdowns in his last 2 seasons at LSU, which, of course, is big because we are seeing more and more quarterbacks come into our league who are mobile, and we love that from a fantasy perspective. I'm not saying he's a running quarterback by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, he's not Kyler Murray, but he's good at avoiding defenders, and you know, he could pick up some yards on the ground. He's ridiculously accurate. He's got a great touch. He's got really good arm strength. He can make every throw. He's one of the most exciting quarterback prospects to come out of college in a while.
You know who he reminds me of a little bit is Tony Romo.
I like that. Yeah. I like that comparison.
No, he in terms of his escapability and his just movement within the pocket, it's not like he plays for Burrow never plays frenetically. Like, his feet are always kind of in constant motion. He always looks like he's in control of his body. And Romo was really, really good at that, too, in the pocket. I will be shocked, Fabs. I know it was just kind of a one-year thing. Burrow, his previous year, only threw 16 touchdown passes, but I will be shocked if he's not a very good pro, because everything we saw out of this past season, I get it. It was a perfect year. He had a ton of talent around the offensive line at LSU. It was fantastic. I get all of that.
So,
but if you divorce his play from those intangibles, from the receivers and offensive line, he was still amazing.
So remember all of the hype, and it ended up being spot on with Andrew Luck, you know, coming out of Stanford, and everyone said he is a definite stud in the NFL before he even was drafted, before he stepped on a football field in the National Football League. Everyone said Andrew Luck is a lock. Is Burrow that kind of lock?
I don't think so. He's not that type of lock, just because Luck had a little bit more of a runway, but yep. He's definitely, I would say, you know, if you had to rank like the top quarterbacks come out of the last 20 years, we've had so many of them, Burrow would probably be in that top five or six. Mm-hmm. He's that good.
Yeah.
I mean, he's that good. I understand it's taken him some time. It took him, you know, he was behind 3-4 great quarterbacks when he originally went to Ohio State. He didn't really get a great chance until 2018. And man, I mean, he exploded this past year.
Yeah, so he'll be the first quarterback picked in Dynasty. He'll be the first quarterback picked in Redraft, no question about that. And he will be picked no matter where he ends up, because I would be shocked if Burrow doesn't come right in and take over a starting role wherever he lands, which may be Cincinnati. That's where everyone expects. But if there's drama and he ends up with the Dolphins or someplace else, I mean, he's going to be the guy. Let's move on to Tua Tagovailoa. And I still have no idea how you get that sound tongue from T-A-G-O. I have no idea, but that's how you pronounce it. If I had never heard the man's name said correctly, I would have butchered it. I would have just butchered it. Anyways, we all know the story with Tua, right? Because I'm not going to say his last name again. No one wants to say his last name. They just call him Tua. He played 9 games this past season. He had that really bad hip injury against Mississippi State. When he did play, over 2,800 passing yards, 33 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Didn't have much success as a runner. And I don't know that he is a running quarterback, again, like a Kyler Murray, but he could probably do some things with his feet if he needed to. 43 touchdown passes, 6 interceptions in 2018, completed around 70% of his passes combined over the last 2 seasons. He's 6'1", he's 218. He's left-handed, right? So, I mean, I wonder if that's going to – it probably isn't, but I wonder if that's – I guess I don't even have to wonder. It is going to be sort of a challenge, right? Because for any offensive coordinator who's bringing in a left-handed quarterback, everything kind of turns around a little bit, right? But he's potentially a top 10 player, potentially a top 5 player. He has had some durability issues. The hip injury, which was awful against Mississippi State, notwithstanding, he's also dealt with knee and ankle injuries. So, Graham, where do you project him to be going in the draft? I think you had already mentioned he's probably a top 5 pick. And is he a guy, assuming that he is 100%, can come right in and make a fantasy impact?
Sure. Look, I think Tua has already beaten some of the injury outlines that people were giving him, you know, a couple months ago. You know, he had the really bad hip injury, and it kind of seemed like everyone was like freaking out, like, oh my God, is he going to, you know, be able to even play in 2020? And it looks like he might be pretty close to health by the time the draft rolls around. Not 100%, but pretty close. Look, I think Tua, I will be shocked if Tua does not go in the top 10. I saw a report last week, or maybe it was just a mock draft, that Justin Herbert, Oregon quarterback,
right,
was. There are rumors basically saying that Herbert could go over Tua, mm-hmm. and that would be a massive mistake, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Really, the only red flags we have with Tua at this point are the injury concerns. You know, he's had the hip injury. He's hurt his ankles multiple times, or sprained his ankles multiple times with Alabama. But everything he's put on the field, everything he's put on tape has suggested he is just a bona fide stud. I mean, just watching those Bama games, like the way the ball comes out of his hand, it's just money.
Yep.
He's
got a great release. Yeah, I mean, he's got it all.
Yeah, he's going to be fantastic. And again, I think I saw the same. I think it was maybe the same report mentioned that the Dolphins would be interested in Herbert over Tua, which doesn't make any sense to me either. But be that as it may, Tua is still going to go in the top 5, and hopefully by 2021 he'll be a full time starter.
Yeah,
because I don't think he's going to get.
Starter. If he goes to Miami, I mean, you know that Ryan Fitzpatrick has that contract stipulation where he needs to start at least half the season. I mean, like every single year, no matter where he goes,
it's a rite of passage. Yeah, exactly. In the NFL at this point, Fabs, that Ryan Fitzpatrick has to start at least 6 games.
And not for nothing, but Ryan Fitzpatrick has been damn good the last couple of seasons, and no one really talks about that. So let's move on to the running back position. Again, we're just going to be talking about the big name guys here, some players that you need to be familiar with. Graham and I are going to break down some more players next week as we get closer to the combine. Boy, I mean, have the first like 2 months of this year freaking flown by, for crying out loud. I mean, it's unbelievable. We're already February 18th.
It felt like January was insane. It felt like January was like 3 months, but February's flown by.
It's blowing by. DeAndre Swift, I like this kid a lot. He reminds me a lot of LeSean McCoy when you look at him on film this past year. 196 carries, over 1,200 rushing yards, 7 touchdowns, also caught 24 balls out of the backfield. He's a really good pass catcher, a really good pass catcher who can make some plays if you get him open in space. I like that about Swift. He's got that good mix of side speed and power. He's not a power back per se, but I think he can run between the tackles, and his game is probably better suited to like a zone scheme. He's a guy that to me, maybe it's not going to be immediately, but he could end up being a three down back. I've seen him in pass protection. He's a pretty good pass protector. He's not afraid to get his hands dirty. Let's put it that way. As a blocker, he's physical. He's strong. I've seen him projected to go in the first round. There's some teams out there that could certainly use him. Tampa Bay, Miami, for example. If he ends up on the right team, and we have seen rookie running backs really come in and make immediate impacts. We saw it with Josh Jacobs this past season. DeAndre Swift could end up being a top 50 pick in fantasy redrafts.
Yeah, it just depends on the landing spot. Yep. But I'm with you. As a receiver, that's what interests me most about DeAndre Swift. And really, what it comes down to for fantasy projections is like, can these guys catch passes adequately?
Right.
Because we've seen it in the past, you know, like Jordan Howard coming out. He's like, okay, he's a good running back, but we don't know how good of a receiver he's going to be. And that's ultimately hurt him. For fantasy. And DeAndre Swift, I found this kind of interesting. Now, granted, Alvin Kamara did it in one last season. They both saw a very similar amount of targets, but DeAndre Swift caught 75 balls for 666 yards and 5 scores on 92 targets at Georgia, while Alvin Kamara caught 76 balls for 694 yards and 7 scores on 94 targets at Tennessee. I see a little bit of Kamara and Swift as a receiver. Not saying they're the same player, not saying they're the same running back, but I see similar sorts of receiving skills coming out, being able to split out as a receiver, being able to be moved out in motion, being able to pass protect on passing downs is a big thing for Swift too.
Yep.
The combine will be really big for him, and it'll really be big for, I think there's like a clear top 6 or 7 in this class of running backs.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be big for all of those guys to kind of separate themselves. But Swift, because he's never handled more than 185 carries in a season, combine will be really big for him to kind of determine exactly what, you know, type of athlete he is and where he ranks in this class.
Mm-hmm. And boy, I tell you, you can say, and I've said this before, the combine is fun to watch. It's really hard to determine fantasy value from the combine alone. It really is. I mean, you can see, like DK Metcalf, right? I mean, some of the drills in the combine last season, he was tremendous. Others, you know, people said he was worse than Tom Brady. And then he came on to the draft and fell and ended up being one of the better rookie wide receivers. NFL GMs and personnel, they are making educated guesses, much like we are out here. But if you go to an article that Gil Brandt has posted, and Gil Brandt, if you do not know, you've got to know Gil Brandt, right? I mean, if you're a football fan, you've got to know Gil Brandt. He is the godfather. And he has got some really good data. And this is a guy who, Gil did this before anybody, okay? He did this before anybody way back in the day with the Dallas Cowboys. But he's got a chart of the minimum target NFL combine test results per player, per position, excuse me. Go out and check that out. I'm assuming it would be NFL.com/Gil Brandt. It's a really good gauge on whether or not a player did well based on his position in the 40-yard dash, in the 10-yard split, in the 20-yard split, in the bench press, at vertical jump, the broad jump, the short shuttle, the 60-yard shuttle, the three-cone, all that kind of stuff. So check that out if you want to just get smarter, because Gil Brandt is – you know, Gil Brandt was doing fantasy football before I got here.
Wow.
He was doing fantasy football for NFL.com before I got here. Gil knows his stuff. Moving on, we'll stick with the running back theme. And so – There's like two or three guys, like even I think Swift is the top running back, but there's other analysts out there who know a hell of a lot more about these rookies than I do that have other guys ranked ahead of him. And I've seen J.K. Dobbins ranked ahead of Swift on certain top 5 positional rankings going into the combine. But Dobbins is a player who this past season rushed for 2,003 yards. And every time I see that, I think of O.J. Simpson, right? He averaged nearly 7 yards a carry. He had 21 touchdowns, also caught 23 balls out of the backfield. And this was a big bounce-back season because Dobbins in 2018 wasn't all that great. And this past year, he actually was able to be a featured back because in the past he had split carries with Mike Weber. He's 5'10", 217 pounds. He's a guy who can be elusive. He can make defenders miss in the open field. He's quick. He's got a good combination of quickness and balance. Didn't run a lot of routes in his collegiate days at Ohio State, but I think he does have some upside as a pass catcher. And another player that, again, from a fantasy perspective, you can watch these guys at the combine all you want. Unless they end up in a team that's going to give them a quick opportunity to be the top guy on the depth chart, it's not going to matter. But if Dobbins goes to a spot where he can end up being potentially a three-down back, he could end up going higher than Swift in dynasty and redrafts.
For sure. Landing spot will be huge with all of these guys.
Yeah,
and
of course.
Jonathan Taylor, Wisconsin running back, he's in that conversation too of top backs. Dobbins this past year, though, I mean, he really showed his athleticism, I think, on tape. I mean, this guy is, he's got breakaway speed. He's got extremely great burst and power in his lower half. Even though Ohio State didn't necessarily ask him to be a receiver, he still caught 20 balls in every single season at Ohio State, freshman, sophomore, and junior year. Ran for over 1,000 yards in every single season as well. You mentioned it, his sophomore year was down for sure, but man, he answered like every question this past year. Just put good game after good game on tape and was a huge part of Ohio State's run late in the year. He ran for over 150 yards in every single game. J.K. Dobbins Fab is really good, good. And I think we're going to be talking about him for fantasy very often.
Yep. Yeah, no question about that. And again, you had mentioned it. There's several more running backs who are, you know, among the top prospects going into this season. If you go to Bucky Brooks, he's got Clyde Edwards-Helaire up there as well, Cam Akers, Jonathan Taylor, as you mentioned. So
I will say this does seem like a top-heavy class. Last year was relatively was a bad running back class. I mean, I know I liked Miles Sanders quite a bit, but, you know, David Montgomery got a little too much hype. Devin Singletary was a great late-round pick. But other than that, there really weren't that many great rookie running backs this past year. This class is going to be another really good one. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty top-heavy. There's five or six guys that are going to be studs. Probably a few decent sleepers for sure. Yep. This is a really fun class.
Yeah, and again, it all depends on where these guys end up, man. And I always use the example of Steven Jackson. When he came out of college, Oregon State, everyone had him as the top running back in fantasy football, the top running back prospect, and he went to St. Louis. And for a year, he was behind Marshall Faulk, and he didn't do anything. And, of course, he ended up having a pretty good career there.
Steven Jackson had an amazing, underrated career.
Yeah.
He was awesome.
He dealt with some injury issues. One season, I believe he held out of camp, and then he didn't have a great season. But he had that one monster freaking year. I don't know if it was the year after Marshall left or not, but
I think it was 2 years after.
He had a huge year.
Yeah, he had like 7 or 8 years where he ran for 1,000 yards, and he was a really good receiver for a big dude.
I interviewed him. I mean, and that dude had muscles on top of muscles, kind of like Eddie does. I mean, he was just a monster. All right, let's move on. The top two wide receivers, and if you look at Daniel Jeremiah, you look at Bucky Brooks, you know, they're both in on Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb. And we're going to talk about Jeudy here first. Out of Alabama this past year, 13 games, 17 catches, over 1,100 yards, 10 touchdowns, averaged over 15 yards per catch, scored 24 total touchdowns in his final 28 games with the Crimson Tide. That's pretty good. If you look at him, I don't know that he's going to be like Julio Jones. I think he could maybe be a little bit closer to like a Calvin Ridley type, maybe a little bit better. Really good route runner. He's super quick. Every time he gets the ball, he can take it to the house. He played a lot out of the slot at Alabama as well. He's effective after the catch, which we're all looking for in fantasy. And again, he's a playmaker, man.
If you want to watch just amazing tape on somebody who is excellent after the catch, is Jerry Jeudy.
Sick. His feet are fast, and he is ridiculous.
He is amazing in open space. He's amazing in confined space. The cuts that he makes in the open field are just absurd. Jerry Jeudy is well deserving of being, you know, not only, I wouldn't say he's the consensus top guy, but consensus top three in this class for sure.
Yeah, I mean, because this class has got, you got Henry Ruggs as well. I mean, there are so many good wide receivers in this class.
Jeudy and Ruggs. Hey, God, those guys, I mean, just those Bama skill guys.
I know.
So ridiculous.
I know,
every
dude.
Single year.
Yeah. Yeah. No question about that. He is a first round lock. We've seen him tied to the Raiders. The Raiders have been tied to CeeDee Lamb too, because the Raiders need a wide receiver badly if they don't get one in free agency. So Judy's going to be someone to keep tabs on. No question about that. Just a fun player to watch. And the thing that when I watched him on tape, the thing that got to me is how quick he gets in and out of his freaking cuts, man. Yeah. Like, he is sick, dude. He is fast.
The start-stop ability for Judy is incredible.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, moving on. CeeDee Lamb, this past season, 62 catches in 13 games, had over 1,300 yards. Averaged 21.4 yards per catch, scored 14 touchdowns, had 26 total touchdowns in his final 27 collegiate games. Of course, it did help that Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray were both there at Oklahoma. He's that big play, deep threat kind of guy. He could take the top off of defense. He's got ridiculously good straight line speed. And if you want to know anything about CeeDee Lamb and what he can do, go and Google Lamb catch versus UCLA. Do you remember that? I mean, that catch was as good as any catch that Odell Beckham Jr. has ever made in his life. It was, you remember the N'Keal Harry catch that he made? I think it was against USC, which was bananas good. Yeah. This one's better.
Yeah.
This one's better. And Lamb is a guy who's going to end up being a first-round pick as well.
Yeah, CeeDee Lamb is awesome, man. He is so good. In his 3 years in college, he went over 800 yards, scored 7 touchdowns in every single season.
Yep.
The game against LSU, he put on, I thought he got open at will against two corners that LSU Tigers are going to definitely put in the NFL. In that previous game against Baylor, he went for like 8 and 170 yards or something like that. I mean, he's ridiculous. And, you know, Fabs, I think this quick preview is kind of a prelude to this receiver class is just as good as like the 2014 one where we had like all of those elite guys come out,
Evans,
Beckham and Evans and Sammy Watkins too. I mean, I know Watkins has been a little bit disappointing in his NFL career, but coming out, I mean, he was a very, very highly touted prospect. I think this class is very similar to that class.
Yeah, it could very well be. And I mean, we have seen more and more rookie wide receivers. You know, it was always kind of tough for these rookies to come out at the wide receiver position to make that really big impact.
It's not the same anymore.
Not with the way that the league is, not with the way that colleges are running pro offenses now. I mean, you go back and you could look at some of the greatest wide receivers of all time. I mean, rookie seasons, they weren't all that great. Now you're seeing more and more guys. I mean, A.J. Brown this past season, Hollywood. I mean, he was inconsistent, but he showed some flashes. And we've got a lot of good wide receivers coming into this 2020 class. Certainly some guys to keep tabs on in the upcoming scouting combine. And Graham and I will break down some more players next week. I figured just these six guys are the biggest names.
For sure.
At their respective positions, arguably. But I basically go off of what Bucky Brooks and Dana Jeremiah are putting out there because
smart. Those
are our two guys, and they're very smart, much smarter than me when it comes to scouting these prospects, and they've got these guys ranked up near the top.
DJ's already got a couple mocks out, too.
He does. Yeah. We were trying to get him on the podcast. I mean,
he's busy.
This dude has, I mean, it's ridiculous. Between watching tape.
He's just a little busy.
Doing interviews, writing columns. Doing mock drafts, trying to be a dad. Apparently, if you look on his Twitter, he lost one of his earbuds from his iTunes or his Apple or whatever the hell it is. And he was complaining about that as well. But you want to talk about a guy who had some big shoes to fill last year and kicked the hell out of it, knocked it out of the park.
Oh, he's a stud.
Mike Mayock, yeah. Right? I mean, like,
yeah, DJ's came a stud, man.
And did, and not for nothing, freaking a great guy, too. So that's going to wrap up today's edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast. Again, Graham and I will be back next week. We're doing these once a week. And then I believe we have one more show, and then Marcus will be back beginning of March. And, I mean, boy, this free agent, I can't wait. This is going to be so much fun, dude. We're going to see trades. We're going to see big-name guys wearing different uniforms. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Between free agency and then a very good skill position class with running backs and receivers, next 2 to 3 months are going to be really fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun. And if you're a fantasy fan, and we know you are, you got to study up on these guys because there's going to be a lot of big names changing home addresses. And a lot of really good young studs coming out who are going to be fantasy superstars for years to come that we're going to be studying up on. So, everybody out there, have a great week. Come back next week and join us. We will see you then.